You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HuntertonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
The weather today is mostly sunny with a high near 63, west winds around 7 miles per hour. Tonight will be mostly clear with a low around 36. There's light and variable winds becoming northeast around 6 miles an hour, but that's after midnight. Tuesday will be sunny with a high near 51, east winds around 8 miles an hour. Tuesday night will be partly cloudy with a low around 37 and east winds around 7 miles an hour. Wednesday will be mostly cloudy with a high near 57 and east winds between 7 and 13 miles per hour. Wednesday night's a chance of showers. It'll be cloudy with a low around 51. The chance of precipitation is 50%. And Thursday, showers. Rain could be heavy at times. High near 63, and the chance of precipitation is 80%. And Thursday night, showers before midnight, mostly cloudy with a low around 47. And a precipitation chance is 50%. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and this is NAMI's hour, compliments at Hunterdon County Chamber Radio, and NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff. We work out of our houses, and as someone once told me, at least the commute in your house is easy. You have no traffic. I says, you don't own my house. I'm a slob. Everything's laying all over the place. But anyway, what NAMI tries to do is we try to help people who have someone in their family who may have a mental illness or who they know of someone or work with someone or is close friends with someone. It doesn't have to be blood relative. And we try to help them through various means. We try to help them through support groups where they can come and talk and everything is confidential. We have a 12-week course which families can take where we try to help them understand better what their relative or loved one or friend or whoever is going through and how they can better adapt to the situation. We have a course called Educating the Educators. A lot of times in this economy, with both parents having to work, the teachers sometimes spend more time with the kids than parents can. And if the teacher is aware of a change in the person's personality or the child's personality, whether it's male or female, it doesn't matter, they're more apt to pick up on it, and which is a good thing. Also, we try to enlighten the police department. We strongly recommend when things are quiet in your house, if you have someone in your house who has a mental health issue, when things are quiet, to go to your local police station and explain to them what the situation is. And sometimes that person maybe get a little loud, and sometimes the police have to come. But at least if they're aware of what the situation is prior to going, it makes it a lot easier. Anyway, as I said, this is NAMI's hour, and we are very, very privileged to have with us Lawrence Brooks, who's the executive director of Hunterdon Youth Services, and Jerry May Grimes, who's the board president. If I got that right?
Yes, you did.
How about that? And I have to ask, because I think a lot of people would want to know, what exactly is Hunterdon Youth Services and how did it start?
So we started back in the 1970s, believe it or not. It's hard for us to believe it's been around that long, but it has. And it originally started out as a county-specific shelter program for both boys and girls, only in Hunterdon County. What happened over the years is that as the needs of the community changed, our program obviously evolved and changed. So we're no longer directly affiliated with the county. We are a private 501c3 nonprofit. And right now, our current focus is on adolescent males. And we provide a group home environment for them, trying to transition them back into the community and with their own families whenever possible.
How does a youth get into your program?
Well, I think half of our boys come to us from the traditional foster care system that many of us are familiar with. And then some of our children come to us when they have a difficult family dynamics, or perhaps they have behavioral issues that their families can't cope with. So they come to us for behavior management, or most of the time they're victims of abuse and neglect. So for a couple of different reasons, and I might want to add that we serve more than Hunterdon County. We serve all the youth of New Jersey. So I think that's misleading. Also, our name, it's Hunterdon Youth Services. We do serve many of the adolescent males throughout the state.
I would assume that you would have various houses or homes in various parts of the state, or would those kids come up here?
Yeah.
Right now, our services are offered strictly in Hunterdon County.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So our kids can come from all over the state, but you know, one of the nice things about Hunterdon County is it's really a nice environment to bring mm-hmm. those kinds of kids, and especially kids who come from more urban environments. And many of them, you know, their eyes just light up even on the drive over to Hunterdon County, because it's definitely. You know, it's a rehabilitative environment.
Yes.
The community itself is. And I think that makes such a difference for our kids as well and their families.
And ever since you guys were on last January, I've been meaning to ask and meaning to find out, what do the kids do in the summer? Or kids, well, the adolescents is basically.
You could still call them kids.
Yeah, they are. To me, everybody's a kid. You know, you're a kid compared to me. You know, but what are the youth who are in your program, what do they do during the summer?
So we actually have a pretty comprehensive summer program for them. So part of it is tutoring and education, because almost all of our kids are behind academically when they come to us.
Okay.
So we're constantly trying to bring them up to grade level whenever possible. But then the other piece of it is we really rely heavily on our community partners. So this summer, for example, Financial Resources Credit Union came in and did financial literacy one day a week. SAFE at Hunterdon came in one day a week and did domestic violence and gender equality kinds of issues with our kids. Planned Parenthood came in one day a week and did sexual health education for our kids. And of course, one day a week, we try to do some really fun activity like Dorney Park or mm-hmm. going down to the beach or something like that.
Right.
So it's a pretty structured environment even during the summer months as well.
Okay. What is the, well, someone, you get someone either through however the sources may be that recommend that child to you. What is the length of stay?
Well, so I'm going to back up just a little bit, because one of the things that you said that I think is really important, Larry, that I don't think many people realize about New Jersey is, in terms of the kids that come to us, it's actually a mutual selection process.
Yes.
So the kids and their families get to go on what's called meet and greets. Okay. I call it interviews. So they get to go around and interview multiple programs, and then they can decide which program do we feel like has the best services for our child. So I think that's one of the nice things about our state. And then likewise, we also are a part of that interview process. So we can say, yeah, we think we can meet Larry's needs, or no, you know, mm-hmm. Larry's needs are beyond the scope of our program. So I think it's really nice that we're in an environment where it is that mutual selection process. But
I'm sorry.
But back to your question, which was the length of stay. It varies pretty widely for our kids, but we tend to see around 9 months to a year to be the average length of stay. We have had some kids who've been with us for 2 years or even longer. And then we've had a few that have only been with us for a few months. A couple of them because they were able to leave successfully, and a couple of them because, you know, you figure out pretty quickly that we're not going to be able to meet their needs and they need to move to a higher level of care.
Right. When someone comes from a either broken family or abusive family and you have a meet and greet with them, how do you evaluate that child with the so-called parents who come with them?
Well, I believe most of the children that come to us are attended by with a case management worker. So they're the ones that kind of evaluate their situation, make recommended programs that they can attend. And at that point, it's kind of a mutual decision between actually us and the case management worker and the youth also.
Well, and I think too, Larry, you know, you're right on the money, because the bottom line is, you know, there is typically a honeymoon period. So most of the time, the family and the young person are trying to sell themselves to us, and we're obviously trying to sell ourselves to them. But, you know, one of the things that helps us is there usually is some sort of history. Mm-hmm. So we do usually have their file ahead of time, and we're able to read the file. And if we see specific things that cause us concern, we're able to ask. So, for example, if somebody had a history of substance abuse, we're able to talk about, you know, so what kind of treatment have you gone through, and what was your drug of choice, and you know, how are things now, and those kinds of things. So we do have some background information on them. But I will say, you know, it's not foolproof.
I'm sure nothing is really. Yeah. When you think
very
about
true.
It.
And the other thing I just want to comment on, because
sure,
the families really are critical in the process, as you well know from your work with
sure.
NAMI as well. So a lot of times,
some just don't get it.
Yes.
Very true.
I'm sorry, but they don't, you know. And I'm not blaming them. I'm not, you know, crucifying them or anything, but they just sometimes don't get it.
And I will say, we have what I think is a pretty exceptional therapist on staff, and she really does a great job of trying to engage the families. But, you know, the kids that we're really successful with, you're right on the money. You know, those are the kids who you are able to engage the youth, but you're also able to engage the family. And that's when you really see success.
Right.
And that is our end goal, really, is to try to unify them with their families of origin. I mean, it's not that way all the time, but that is our main goal. And we would like to reunify the families with their youth, with the youth.
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, every time we talk about something similar to your organization or something like that, this young man comes to mind. Well, he's no longer a young man. He's almost my age. But his parents ran a pedophile ring. And he and his two brothers were forced into it by his parents. And someone had said to him, well, why didn't you go to somebody? Why don't you? He says, who was I supposed to go to? The police chief and all the four cops were all involved. He says, the pastor of the church and half the congregation was involved. Who was I supposed to? And this is up in New Hampshire. And, you know, it's like when I heard it, I was like, whoa. Now, he's been on a raid with me twice already. He's a musician, and he writes songs more or less dedicated to helping people who are in sexual abuse, verbal abuse, physical abuse. He goes and talks, you know, makes presentations. And unfortunately, his two brothers committed suicide because they couldn't handle it. And, you know, it's just, you hear that, and then you see a program like you guys have, and I say, wow, if you could save one person from going through the hell that, you know, this young man, well, this gentleman has gone through, you know, it's well worth it.
Well, and, you know, I think one of the things that that certainly Jerry can attest to in the time that she's been with our program is even some of our most successful kids who, you know, you see the real potential in them, when they leave the program, invariably they're going to wind up reconnected with that family environment because that's all they know.
Right.
And, you know, for them, they still view it as a support system, and it breaks our hearts on the one level. But on the other level, you know, you also have to hope that you've instilled enough in them that when the time is right, they will be able to break free and move on.
Right.
But you're right, Larry. You know, those familial ties, you know, they go with all of us throughout most of our lives. They
really
do.
Even if they're good, bad, or indifferent, that's what they're familiar with, and that's what they're comfortable with. And it might not be our normal, but it's their normal.
Right.
And so it's comfortable to go back to that environment. But again, we hope our work has given them some sort of foundation and base to make better choices.
And I got to ask, all this costs something. So how do you, you know, is there grants that you get, or is there, you know, fundraisers? Obviously, you do that. I mean, I would think. But how does most of your finances come from?
Most of our funding comes from the federal government through the Medicaid program.
Okay.
And obviously, it's not enough in most cases. And then it's supplemented through fundraising and the generosity of the donors in the community. And, you know, we've been very blessed with all the businesses and establishments, companies that have supported our organization. To help us do those great things for the boys and be able to repair our facilities, the comedy night fundraisers and the golf outings and things of that nature. But predominantly, most of our funding does come through Medicaid.
Okay. I just, you know, thinking, not being well-versed on this, finances, you know, it has to come from somewhere. So I was just curious, you know, where it came from, because obviously you're not just doing it for, you know,
absolutely.
You may be wanting to do it for the sake of doing it and helping people, but, you know, still you need finances to buy the food and, you know.
Absolutely. And we've had a lot of generosity with the food pantry and other, organic farms that we just actually experienced them dropping off all kinds of good, you know, homegrown organic products. Right. That's their surplus. So, again, things like that, it all adds up with the donations of the community.
Well, and I'll just interject, too, that, you know, our big fundraisers are in May for our golf outing and in October for our comedy night. But people can always go online, 200andyouthservices.org, and they can give online. And we actually have two interesting ways that people can support us. One is by every time you send flowers to somebody, if you go to Touched by Flowers and choose Hunterton Youth Services, we get 50% of all the profit of your purchase from that.
Hmm.
And then almost everybody nowadays is an Amazon shopper. And if you go to Amazon Smile and pick Hunterton Youth Services, we get 1% of everything you, half of 1% of everything that you spend comes back to us. So, you know, keep those
That's
things
awesome.
In mind, too.
Yeah, you can repeat that later on.
Thank you. Okay.
Absolutely. We will do that.
Yeah, because I'll forget it by the end of the show, so you can repeat it. Is there a single most reason why a youth or a child or a young adult would come into your program? I mean, is it like drug addiction or physical abuse or what? Is there something that stands out overall?
Well, I would say that the label that probably the majority of our kids come in with is oppositional defiant.
Okay.
So it's sort of that anger management and dealing with authority and those kinds of things. And, you know, some of that is pretty typical of the developmental stage of adolescence because you are trying to separate from authorities. But, you know, obviously in the case of our kids, it's gone beyond the norm and has to be addressed. So I would say that that's probably the number one thing that brings kids to us. In terms of substance abuse, we do see that quite a bit. What we're most successful with is kids who have gone through a substance abuse program and
prior to coming to us,
right. Yes, because we are definitely not a substance abuse specific program. We do partner with Daytop and other community providers. Mm-hmm. So if somebody has an issue with substance abuse, then while they're with us, they can also go to their outpatient programs.
Right.
But, you know, we have had kids that we've had to say, you know, right now your substance abuse issues are beyond what we can control. Go take care of that through inpatient and then you can come back to us. Because, you know, as Jerry can tell you, we definitely never want to turn away any of our kids. I mean, you know, we definitely have our heart and soul into it.
Right. No, I can understand that. And it's got to be tough to turn somebody away. Even if you realize that they're not going to fit, it's still got to be tough because you're looking at, well, what's going to happen to them? You know, what's going to happen to them down the road and yada, yada.
There's been rare occasion that we've stepped outside the box, quite frankly, because we really felt that we could address the needs of that particular child. But in most cases, we want to make sure they're placed in the proper facility that'll be able to, you know, identify with their needs and treatment.
Right, right. I got to ask, what's the maximum you can have in your
12?
12?
12, yes.
All right, let's say you have 12 youth in your house. how did they get along? Because they're at that age. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
Yes.
I got four kids.
I'll let Lawrence answer that because he lives with them every day. I don't.
You know, I mean, I have four kids. They're all adults now. They're all probably older than you guys are. But, you know, when they were little, younger, teenagers.
Yes.
Oh, Lord. You'd want to choke them, you know.
Well, I would say,
or send them to their room.
We do have those feelings from time to time, so you know, we have to manage those feelings, right, Larry?
Yes, absolutely.
But four
survived, so we managed them. You know,
that's exactly
well,
right.
Well, Lawrence can go into specifics, but I can tell you, I like to attribute a lot of this to the senior staff and the leaders like Lawrence and the staff members that work with our boys every day. You know, we do some resident coaching with the boys, and so staff members do kind of, they develop that bond relationship with each resident.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it is attributed to the different things that our staff does to create those bonds.
Well, and I think the other thing too is, and I know you had the chance to come see our house,
right.
And it's a fairly large home, mm-hmm. with three different levels. So there tends to be a lot of space that if somebody needs to get away, they can. And then the property itself is on, 4 acres.
Right.
So there is some outdoor space. So, you know, when the weather's bad and they're confined, it makes it that much more challenging. But most of the time, I would say that there is, avenue for escape. But quite honestly, it is just like siblings. So some days everything is great. And then other days, no matter what you do, it's the wrong thing.
Right. Now, I was just thinking, if you got 12 boys, what are their age range from?
They can be as young as 13 and even as old as around 20, 21, depending upon what their individual situation is. Most of our kids tend to be in that 16 to 18 year age range.
You're nodding your head, Larry. So, yes, we do understand. But like anything else, I think the staff, too, because of the ratio of staff to residents, I think that helps. Like when you're a parent of 12 people, there's only usually one of you at one time or two of you at most. But I think in this case, we do have the ratio very well played out with the residents.
I think
staff.
What she's saying is divide and conquer, Larry. That's what she's really saying, politely.
Well, it's like, they have to be, I would think, competitive. Like if they're, say they're into sports or whatever, they have to be competitive with each other in the home.
Well, I think
because most kids are competitive with each other, whether they're brothers, sisters, or just friends,
There's an interesting dynamic there. They're all really quite a blend, right, Lawrence? Wouldn't you say not all of them are competitive? And I think that I know what you're saying, Larry, and it can be challenging like anything else, any other home environment. The dynamics can be just different. And like Lawrence said, there is space. And one boy could be going to work and one's going here and one's going there. So there's always something going on. And except for mealtime and not even all that time, I don't think that they're with each other 24/7. Am I right, Lawrence?
Well, yes. And I think that one of the other things that I find interesting is when they're really competitive with each other is when they want attention. Just like with a parent, when you want attention from your parent and the other siblings getting it, that's when they tend to become mm-hmm. competitive. So in terms of sports and those kinds of things, I will say that they're actually pretty supportive of each other. I mean, they really do step up and form sort of that bond of we're in this together and we want to support each other in it. But I think you see some of the competition arise when it comes to, interactions with, their favorite staff or those kinds of things. Or who gets to use the phone or computer time. Those kinds of things,
Is there limitation on how long they can be on a phone or how long they can sit in front of a television or?
Yes. There are definitely limitations. And, this past year, our board was very generous to us and allowed us to invest a lot of money in staff training. And we actually redid our whole behavior management system. So that now it's very individualized for each of our residents. In the past, it was kind of a one-stop shop for all the kids.
Generalization.
And part of that has really helped us to identify the unique values for each of our residents and try to approach how we intervene with them by addressing it in terms of what they hold important, not necessarily what we hold important. And then the other piece of that is, so every day, they can either gain or lose privileges based on their behaviors. And this past year, we really implemented a lot more of community involvement and giving the kids greater autonomy to engage in the community. And I will tell you that that is probably the number one driver for our kids. I mean, almost all of our kids really strive to not lose that privilege. Again, because they're at that age where they want to have some autonomy and be able to do some things on their own.
Right, right.
It's very similar to parenting, Larry, as you and I would call it, you know. You know, that you're rewarded for good decisions and choices. And like anything else, there's consequence to your actions and you lose privileges. So I think that it's really worked well with our boys, and especially during the summer. So as Lauren said, they really, really embrace that on, you know, being able to go out on their own.
I could understand that. Are there any other obstacles that you face when dealing with your youth that you serve?
Let's see. So I think the biggest obstacle that we have is the substance abuse. And I think that, you know, we're hearing more and more about the level of substance issues here in Hunterdon County. You know, we used to think that we were a little bubble, yeah, that it didn't penetrate.
Right.
But that's no longer the case. And, you know, we find that not only do we find that kids are wanting to use substances, but they're also wanting to make money by dealing in substances.
Right.
And, you know, again, with this age group, they just don't think through the long-term consequences of what their behaviors are going to impact them in the future. So I would say that that's certainly one of the challenges that we face.
And unfortunately, that heroin has gotten so cheap.
That's what it is.
Really? It's, and the fact that, you know, I know a law enforcement officer mentioned one time, not too awful long ago, that you walk down a street, you don't see the Hell's Angel black leather jacket and, you know, tattooed arms and all that. He says, but you'll see the Hell's Angel walking down a street with a suit and tie, because it's Hunterdon County and they're still dealing drugs. But they're doing it with a suit and tie and not with a bike, you know, not with on a motorcycle or whatever. And that just was like, whoa, you know, that was like a shock. And he says, it's fact. And you believe it, you know. And it's just sad because, you know, like you said, the youth, yeah, they can find out, well, gee, I can sell this, I can make money. But you also can go to jail for, you know, a long time, you know, depending on your age and everything. It's just, I don't know, it's just something that it has to be an obstacle that you face, because I mean let's face it, you're not taking, well, they may be A students, but they're not, you know, what you consider the ideal student or youth.
Even the most ideal student, I think, can fall victim to
absolutely.
That type of
absolutely. But what I'm saying is that
abuse.
You're dealing with a group
absolutely.
Of students that
already have
you know, numerous problems, yes. that the average youth doesn't have,
and the family, you know, history too.
And a family,
you know,
history,
because,
right?
I mean, unfortunately, it is repeating cycles that they've witnessed most of their lives. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. We have to take a quick break. You're listening to Hunterdon Youth Services, and we'll be back in just a few moments.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington, or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, Celebrant Officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and we're very fortunate today to have with us Lawrence Brooks, who's the Executive Director of Hunterdon Youth Services, and Jerry May Grimes, who's the Board President of Hunterdon Youth Services. And we've been talking about what Hunterdon Youth Services is, the clientele it serves, and I understand that you guys just opened a thrift store. So would you like to expand a little bit on that and where it is and how you came to that decision?
Well, we felt the thrift store was a great vehicle for us to increase our presence in the community, expand our volunteer base, and also increase our vocational program, actually, okay. And give our boys some employment opportunities and develop some skill sets. It's actually located right near Pete's Bike Shop in Flemington on Farm 31. Yes, yeah. Farm 31. We opened in June, and we are certainly always looking for volunteers to help us with that, in addition to donating furniture or household items. So it's a home and housewares thrift store.
Okay.
So things can be donated through there, and we would give you a tax-deductible certificate, and then we would sell them, and that's what helps us subsidize our program.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. What made you think that a thrift store would be something you'd want to open and try?
Well, so I think one of the things that that led us in this direction was really trying to provide vocational opportunities for our kids initially when they come into the program.
Yes.
Because at the time that we really started the thrift store, a lot of our kids were really having trouble finding jobs in the community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while unemployment rate has gone down, you know, certainly for our kids, it's a challenge. And so what we're hoping will happen as a result of this is that once the kids have had the opportunity to work in our thrift store, then they have a reference with work experience that they can talk to an employer about. And we're able to instill the work skills in them of showing up on time, customer service, being respectful, all of those kinds of things, so that before we give them to a community employer, we're sure that they're going to show up and do the job they need to do. So that was really, I think, the primary driving force behind the move.
Does, if someone from your clientele gets a job, ShopRite, wherever, do you follow up with them to see, you know, like talking with the people at ShopRite or, you know, How's Joe doing? Is he, you know, whatever? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, we do. We do, actually.
It's like pathways to employment. When they help someone get a job, they follow up and see how, you know, things are going and, you know, yada, yada. Even if it's only once a month, you know, they do follow up on it. So
yes, and each of our residents has been assigned what we call a resident coach, which is like a mentor, but a staff mentor.
Okay, yeah.
And so they tend to be the ones who follow up on the vocational aspect and determine how they're doing. And there have been a couple of times where they've really been able to step in and save the kid's job, you know, to help the manager understand what's going on and also help, again, help the kids understand this is a job. It is work.
Right.
And there's a certain expectation at work that is very different from when you're at home. That continues to be a struggle, you know.
We've all experienced that as parents, right, Larry?
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, it's I think it's wonderful, actually, you know, because it gives the kids, well, they're not so much kids, but the youth a chance to see what it's like in the quote unquote real world, you know, where you're going to have to get a job. You're going to have to, you know, if you want to keep it, you better be there on time. You better do your job right or whatever. So I think that's pretty awesome.
Well, and, you know, going back to something that we talked about earlier, you know, we talked about privileges and those kinds of things for our kids. And, you know, generally speaking, even when one of our kids loses their privileges, we usually don't make them quit their job because obviously we know the community's counting on them as well. In severe cases, we would, you know, but it has to be pretty extreme. But one of the things that happens is, you know, if you don't have your privileges in the house, then you're going to pay for a taxi to take you to and from work, and it's coming out of your money. Whereas if you have your privileges, we provide transportation, we provide all those supports. So again, for us, it just provides another positive reinforcement for them about motivation for change. And almost all of our kids are motivated to get a job. And it's been interesting to me, our most recent residents that have come in the last month or two, their very first thing within 2 or 3 days of being with us, they were online filling out applications, trying to find employment. And I will tell you from my experience a year ago, before we really implemented these kinds of programs, that wasn't happening.
Okay.
So we're really starting to see a huge change in how our kids perceive this opportunity.
That's great.
And you know, it's great because one does it, then another, then they see the success of that one. And so they all lead by example. So it really works out nicely.
If you had to determine successes this year or this past year,
there's so many. But the highlight.
What would some of them be?
Well, so certainly one of them would be, I think, the cultural change that we've instituted in our program as a result of the staff training and the investment that we've had in that.
Okay.
You know, again, now everything is much more client-focused and client-driven. The other thing that I feel particularly blessed about, Larry, is because of what our board has and the community have been able to do with fundraising, the amount of money that we spend directly on services for our kids has gone up tremendously. So we're really able to implement some specialty kinds of services. Mm-hmm. So beyond the traditional therapy that we all think of, we now do equine therapy with our kids. We do yoga with our kids. And I know for me, when I first started understanding about yoga, I thought, well, you know, what is this hokey kind of thing that we're wanting to do? But what the research is really showing us is, especially for kids who have experienced trauma, and all of our kids have in one shape or the other, it is for many of them the first time that they have ever really gotten in touch with sort of the mind and body and really felt a sense of what it means to be centered and how to come to a centered place amongst the chaos that's around you. So, you know, we really view these as sort of essential life tools that we're teaching the kids above and beyond the quote unquote therapy that we provide to the kids. So I think that's been a real blessing. The other thing that, again, I think both the board and the staff really feel strongly about is academic success. So, you know, in the last 2 years, all of our kids who've been eligible to graduate from high school have graduated.
That's awesome.
And we're really proud of that. And I will say that our staff is pretty regularly now on the school system website and looking at people's grades and, again, tying academic achievement into privileges and helping the kids to understand, you know, if you don't have passing grades in school, then how can you justify to us that you're going to be able to have a job in the community? You know, now once your grades are passing, then we're all for you having a job in the community, but they have to go together.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in many ways, we serve that pseudo parent kind of role.
Absolutely.
Do you ever follow up and see that any of them go to college?
Yes, some of them do go to college.
I'm not saying all of them, but you know.
No, but some of them do.
Okay.
And we have a couple of kids right now who are very highly motivated to go to college. A lot of our kids end up in the military.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Which for our kids is a good option oftentimes because it provides them that structured environment.
Absolutely.
And the chance to really break away from some of the dysfunctional families that they come from. But I would say we probably average on any given year probably about 20 to 25% of our kids actually starting college.
That's not bad.
So, you know for the population we're working with.
When you stop and think about it, that's really not bad, you know.
Yeah.
And we're improving all the time. I mean, there's just so many things that are changing now with the dynamics of the organization and what direction we're going into that I think we're going to see more and more successes as the years progress.
Yeah, and the military, you know, is not a bad option either. for
structure is very good for our youth, absolutely, for our young men.
I know I graduated high school when I was 17 and joined the service, so, you know, of course, I love my mother to death, but she was her way or the highway, and she had my life planned for me, so I figured that was not going to happen, and I'll do it my way, you know. But seriously, it's just, you know.
Well, it makes you grow up, and
oh, yeah.
For some of our kids,
yeah.
That is part of what they need is, you know, they need to understand, you know, you are responsible now for your choices and decisions, and hopefully we've given you the tools you need, but now it's on you, you know?
My mother used to do everything for me. She made the bed. She did everything. You know, I'm serious. You're looking at me like that, but I'm serious. She did. When I got into the service, they tell you, well, you got to make your bed, and it's got to be with the crosses this way and the blankets, you know. And I'm looking, I'm going, oh, my God, really? I never made a bed in my life, you know. But you learn, you know. Well, it's either that or you're out there doing 100 push-ups, one or the other, you know.
Well, but you know, Larry, those are exactly the kinds of life skills that we take for granted, most of us take for granted, but that our kids don't know. You know, they don't know how to do their own laundry. They don't know how to prepare a nutritious meal. They don't know, you know, how to make the bed. And that's part of what we do is instill in them, you know, here are the life skills that you need to know to be successful as an adult. And, you know, even money management and balancing a checkbook. And, you know, it's amazing to me, some of our kids get credit card offers. And I'm thinking, you know, what is this?
Yeah,
you know?
I know.
And I think most of us have a negative experience with our first credit card. But, you know, usually we have a support system that can bail us out. Well, these kids don't.
Right.
So we have to be that safety net for them and hopefully guide them in the right direction.
And life skills is an integral part of our program, too, Larry. I might add that we bring in financial resources to teach them how to budget and do a checking account, opening up a savings account, things of that nature. We bring in a nutritionist. They show them how to make a well-balanced meal. In fact, our kids do make the meals together with the staff. So they do participate as far as the household duties and chores. So,
yeah. You have volunteers, I assume, in your organization?
We do have volunteers, and they play a very critical role for us. And I'd love to share with you what we need with volunteers.
There
go ahead.
So,
go ahead.
Of course, Jerry is our chief volunteer as our board president. But we also have six other board members who are phenomenal. We're really blessed with a terrific board. But we are always looking for additional board members if anybody has an interest in that. We also have several committees that we have.
Okay.
And one of the ones that we are in desperate need of volunteers for is called our facility committee. Because as you can imagine, most of the staff, our backgrounds are more in social work and social services and psychology and those kinds of things. So when the plumbing goes out, we know virtually nothing about what we're supposed to be doing. So
neither do I. That's why I call a plumber.
So We desperately need people on our facility committee. We also have a fundraising committee, a finance committee, a program committee, which really looks at, you know, what are the programs and services that we're offering to our kids and what should we be offering to really expand the continuum of care. So that's one that a lot of people have really enjoyed, I think, being a part of. We do have some volunteers who work directly with our kids. This is supervised by staff, but they generally provide tutoring to our kids, and that's always an area of need. We talked about the thrift store earlier, desperate need for volunteers to assist us at our thrift store. And I would tell you that our office manager would love to have somebody who comes in and helps us at the office, whether it's answering the phones or helping to get some of our letters out and those kinds of things. We could always use people who want to do that as well.
And even for our life skills program. And again, I think everybody has a gift or talent to contribute and sharing that with our youth, whether it be cooking or some sort of special hobby that they do, especially now with the holidays around the corner, it might be something that they might have some interest in.
What does the board do?
We oversee that Lawrence is doing his job. I'm just kidding.
No, they do that. It's a hard job.
Lawrence actually has been a terrific addition to our organization. He's been with us about a year and a half, and he's really changed the face of our organization within the community and within the child welfare industry. And I will tell you that he's the one that's really leading the train. We oversee the financials. We make sure that there's no exorbitant spending and make sure everything is allocated in its proper place. We do a budget every year. We obviously initiate some fundraising opportunities for the organization, and we're always looking at different programs, how to increase awareness of our program as well.
Okay. I'm going to ask one of your questions. If you had a magic wand, what would you change?
We have a different answer, but I think that we could both share.
Well, you both can share the answer. Yes. I mean, you know.
Well, ladies first or no?
No, go right ahead, Lawrence.
All right. Well, I would say that one of the things that really resonates for me, Larry, is the concept of tolerance. And I think that one of the struggles that we really have with a lot of our kids that we're working with is even their own families don't necessarily have a tolerance level. They want a perfect child. And as we all know, there is no such thing as perfection. And
except in this room.
Right.
Yeah, you know, outside of the three of us.
Of course. And then I think the other thing, too, is, you know, from a societal perspective, you know, the things that a lot of our kids engage in nowadays that, you know, when I was growing up would have been viewed as horseplay or other kinds of things get taken very seriously and often lead to criminal charges. And, you know, while I highly believe in accountability and the fact that we have to hold our kids accountable, I just wish that there was a little greater tolerance about some of the things that are leading to the behaviors that we're seeing. And I will say that we have been very blessed with the Sheriff's Department. When we've, on the rare occasion that we've needed them, they do have an understanding of who we are and who our kids are, and they've worked with us very well, as has the Juvenile Prosecutor's Office.
Prosecutors.
They've been great.
County prosecutors, awesome.
Yeah, they have been great about really talking to us about, you know, what is the issue with this child, and is prosecuting them going to help or hurt, mm-hmm. you know, their future, and how do we balance this? So I will say, you know, part of why we feel very blessed to be a part of Hunterdon County is because the community really does rally around you. But for our kids as a whole, I think that tolerance is one of the key things that needs to be expanded.
Well, an extension of that, what my big dream would be to build an independent living facility for the boys. So once they age out of the program that no longer is subsidized by the state, they have an opportunity to go into a transitional living program.
Okay.
I know children today that come from very supportive family environments do not get jobs or out on their own until they're 25, 26 years old. And here we have these young men that have not really had the greatest odds with them. And they need as many tools as possible for life success beyond 18 or 19 years old. So I believe there is a huge, huge need for the youth that we serve, that once they leave our program, we would like to be able to continue that for them to have a more independent and successful life.
Okay. Do either of you see down the road a situation where you could use your organization to help young girls?
Well, so I would say that is part of ongoing conversations that we've had. You know, when you asked about what the role is that the board has played for me, one of the critical roles that the board has played is, you know, we have a strategic plan. So we have a 3-year strategic plan mm-hmm. that the board and staff were very involved in developing. And as part of that, one of the things we've done is we've looked at who are the other organizations that we can partner with, where are the gaps in the continuum of care that we need to be filling in. And I think our board and staff are both really committed in expanding the services that we do beyond our current focus on adolescent boys. Now, whether that means it's a group home for girls, or whether it means we do outpatient counseling, or whether it's an independent living program or transitional living program, I don't think we know exactly what it's going to be yet, Larry.
Okay.
But I will say that I think that that is something that gets talked about at every board meeting.
Absolutely.
And it's something that we are certainly open to.
See, I just mention it because I understand that, you know, you're helping a lot of young boys, young men. And I just, from my perspective of dealing with families who have mental illness in their family, I see as much young women as I do young men. And yeah, all right. I'm not a big statistic person. Because I think you can make numbers say whatever you want them to say, but the statistics say that mental illness can strike anywhere between 16 and 24, 25 in that area. And if you look it's pretty much almost equal, you know, with men and women. So I just throw it out as something that, you know, because you're saying, and when you initially started, you were both.
I think that the configuration of our home currently, the way it's set up, that was probably the biggest reason why they had to make a decision with the gender.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cohabitating adolescents of boys and girls in one under one roof is a difficult, very difficult process to.
Unless you had an armed guard there, you know.
Right. So I think that the decision was made even before my time and before Lawrence's time, for sure, that that they had to select a specific gender. And I think boys was just I don't know exactly how that.
And I also think the other challenge, Larry, and I know you experienced this through your work with NAMI too, but it is all about funding, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we would love to have another group home and, you know, an independent living program and transitional living and all those kinds of things. But, you know, part of it is, where do you get the initial money to build it?
Right.
And then the other piece is,
how do you
sustain it?
Keep it up?
And, you know, the community has been very generous to us, but not that generous, you know?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, it's we definitely feel like the need is there, but until we feel like we can make the step in good faith and have the financial resources to hopefully be able to sustain it, it's just not a reality for us at this time.
Now, you mentioned earlier some things that if we bought flowers or you want to go through that again real quickly?
Yes. So first of all, you can always visit our website. It's all there at huntertonyouthservices.org. But two of the key things that we're involved in on an ongoing basis, one is called Touched by Flowers. And anytime you want to send flowers to somebody anywhere, you go online, order them through Touched by Flowers, pick Hunterton Youth Services, and we get 50% of the profit from that. They've also just recently added fruit delivery through that as well. So you can also send your citrus if you'd like that way. And then the other one that I know many, many people use is Amazon nowadays. So if you go through Amazon Smile, and you could still use all your Amazon status through using this, but it's Amazon Smile, pick Hunterton Youth Services, and we get half of 1% of your entire purchase. So those are two ways that people can benefit us that really doesn't cost you anything because you're going to do it anyway.
If you're buying it anyway, what's the difference? You know?
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
If someone wanted to reach out to get a hold of either of you, how would they do that? What's the phone number or whatever?
Well, the phone number is 908-782-0848. And we're located right here locally in Flemington.
Right.
And again, 908-782-0848.
And what was the website?
HuntertonYouthServices.org.
Okay. In the last couple minutes that we have, they say it takes a village. Somebody wrote that. I don't know who wrote that, Lawrence, but somebody wrote it. Who are some of the community partners that you work with in order to be successful?
So, you know, this is where I'm going to get myself in trouble because I'll leave people out. But we'll quickly run through some of them. So certainly, we've already mentioned the school system, which is just phenomenal to our kids. The sheriff's department. I have to acknowledge Hunterton Helpline.
Okay.
They have been a great resource to us. We talked about Safe at Hunterton. Planned Parenthood has been a big resource. Certainly the mental health education that NAMI provides to the community has been a resource to us that we use on an ongoing basis. The faith-based community has been a tremendous resource to us. They have definitely taken an active interest in our boys, and particularly during the holiday seasons, they tend to really rise to the occasion.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I should just mention is, you know, Jerry has really been one of our strongest advocates in saying, yes, we want the community to give to us and to support us, but we also want our boys to be a part of the community and give back to the community. So we've really tried to develop an active program in working with the Y, in working with the Raritan Waterway Association, Grow a Row, the Food Pantry and Food Bank.
That's in my township, Grow a Row.
Really just trying to allow our boys to understand that to whom much is given, much is required, and trying to have them give back to the community as well. And we've really tried to make that a priority.
I know Grow a Row used to buy a lot of stuff there. And now because they're, for whatever reason, they don't have it anymore. They can't up there, not allowed to sell because they're in this thing. So that they used to have a shed. They used to have a big. You walk into the main building.
Yeah, like a farmer's market almost.
Almost like,
right.
Yeah, you know, corn on the cob. Right. And, you know, honey that they had there. They can't sell any of that anymore.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, they can't because they have the grower row and they're helped for whatever reason. I don't know what the exact cause of it is, but they can't. Because we were at community day from the chamber during the summer, and they had a table. So I was talking to one of the girls. I says, how come I can't go there and buy honey anymore? And she was trying to explain it to me, but of course my thick head didn't, you know, cover it all. But I know that they can't sell it because I can see that there's nobody there buying it. But you see a lot of people, buses there with the kids coming out and working in the farm and all that.
Well, I want to acknowledge the Chamber, first of all, too. Hunterdon Chamber has been just a terrific resource for us and a great vehicle for us to be able to increase our awareness and outreach of our organization. And I've always been an advocate for being a part of the Chamber. It's part of the community, part of the businesses.
Right.
And I'd like to thank you, Larry, for having us on here. That's another great way for us to spread our good word and our good work.
Well, I won't be 11 months until you come back, I can guarantee. But I will say, if NAMI can do anything for it, help you in any way, you've got my number. Just
thank you, Larry.
Reach
thank
out.
Thank you, Larry.
You know,
thank
okay, because we'd be more than happy to help you if we could in any way.
Thank you very much.
With that, I'm going to ask you one more time. Your office phone number was
908-782-0848.
And website?
HuntertonYouthServices.org.
And if you're going to buy flowers for your wife for Christmas or Thanksgiving or
touch
something,
touch my flowers.
Touch my flowers, and Hunterdon Youth Services gets 50% of the profits. And if you're going to buy something from Amazon, which most people do anyway,
They
get a half a percent of what you buy from, you know, the profit from what you buy from them.
Yes.
So, and it helps. You know.
It does.
It really does. It really
and guys,
does.
You're doing a great job, and I really appreciate you coming on again, and it won't be that long again before you're back, I promise.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
I hope you both have a great Thanksgiving.
You too.
And folks, we'll be here next week, same time, same station. And remember, mental health really does matter. See you next week.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
This is USA Radio News. I'm Melody Burkett. President Obama calls ISIS the face of evil. Obama talked about the fight against the terror organization today at the G20 summit in Turkey.
We have always understood that this would be a long-term campaign. There will be setbacks and there will be successes. The terrible events in Paris were obviously a terrible and sickening setback.
He said that despite the attacks, progress has been made in that fight. Obama announced a new agreement with France that would accelerate the sharing of terror-related information with that country. The hacker group Anonymous is taking on ISIS. In a video posted to YouTube, the group says it will launch its biggest operation ever against the terrorist organization that's claimed responsibility for Friday's attacks across Paris. A masked Anonymous spokesman is seen on camera reading a statement in French saying in part, "Expect massive cyber attacks. War is declared." This is USA Radio News. I'm Melody Burkett.
Get your Plenty card at Exxon or Mobil and start earning points at lots of places.
So I get points for filling up at Exxon?
You sure do.
What about getting coffee at Mobil?
Points.
Streaming TV shows on Hulu?
Definitely.
Points on my AT&T wireless bill?
Yep.
Buying soap?
At Rite Aid.
Buying you a birthday present?
Points at Macy's.
Visiting your parents?
No. You get marriage points.
Oh.
Exxon and Mobil are the only fuel brands that are part of Plenty, the rewards program that lets you earn points at one place and use them at another. Join Plenty for free through a participating Exxon or Mobil station today. Terms and limitations apply. See Plenty.com/partners for details.
I'm all about about keeping it simple. Been getting the same haircut from the same guy for 20 years. You can't beat simple. That's why the first place I turn to when I need something is Grainger. I don't want one place for my safety products and another for my abrasives. Grainger has over 1.2 million products and the solutions I need to help keep this place running. Grainger. Simple. Simple. Grainger. Get it? Got it? Good. Call clickgrainger.com or stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Republican presidential